Depleted uranium does not exist in nature. It's a byproduct of the atomic bomb. To manufacture such weapons, uranium mined from the Earth is divided into two parts. One part, containing the isotope U-235, is separated and undergoes an enrichment process which ultimately yields the high explosive. What remains, more than 99% of the original mass, is mostly U-238, a waste product which is much less radioactive. This is called depleted uranium. Military research soon came to understand the advantages of this new artificial metal. One of the heaviest on Earth, it was cheap, plentiful, and easy to mold into shells dense enough to penetrate the heaviest armor. As it is much less radioactive than natural uranium, military planners believed they could adapt it with little danger to the health of their troops. The Gulf War provided the first mass testing ground for this new weapon system. On land, tanks fired depleted uranium shells, as did A-10 Warthogs from the sky, and Navy Phalanx batteries from the sea. According to the Pentagon, 940,000 projectiles, more than 300 tons of depleted uranium, were discharged during the Gulf War.
When one of these uranium bullets is fired, thousands and thousands of grams of fine radioactive dust are spewed into the air. This is much different than a natural uranium exposure. This is much different than a uranium worker's exposure, because it's fine dust right there in the air, and the soldier isn't aware that it's uranium dust. And this is more easily breathed in. And because it's very small particles, it settles in the lungs. This is much, much different than a natural background uranium exposure.
As it speeds through the air, one of DU's most distinctive properties is its capacity to flare off and thus vaporize tiny uranium particles. In this night footage, you can see in red this deadly stream as one tank fires on and destroys another. The consequences of this aerosol-like effect are described by Captain Doug Roque, who for 5 years was in charge of cleaning up the residue from DU's use in the Gulf War.
This is the DU team in Saudi Arabia. This was as we were lifting an M1 tank onto a truck for shipment back to the United States. I'm in the center of this stuff, wearing the hat. Members of this team are dead or sick. The information that came from the United States government and everything is, even though we're questioned, is saying it's not a hazard. There's not going to be any resuspension. The oxides are not, they're going to be so heavy that you won't be able to breathe it into your lungs. So the information that the team, this is the team that cleaned up the mess in Saudi Arabia, was given, has now resulted in team members' deaths and sickness and family destruction. This is the inside of that 120-millimeter impact. The milky white or the cloudy things that you see in this slide is solid uranium dust. This is uranium oxide. This vehicle was clean and all of this oxide was laying on the floor when we entered it. It's almost as if putting your foot or slapping your hand into talcum powder. It resuspended. This shows the resuspension of uranium dust, which goes to prove that it is such a hazard for inhalation or ingestion. It's there, and unless it's physically removed, it can be resuspended and inhaled for eternity, 4.5 billion years. That's what makes it so hazardous and so dangerous to civilians, non-combatants, and other individuals. This is proper clothing that should be worn by any individual that's working on, within 25 millimeters of any vehicle, structure, or material impacted by uranium munitions. This particular individual that's shown in this photograph was not warned that he required respiratory skin protection to climb or crawl on destroyed Iraqi equipment that had been destroyed by depleted uranium munitions. It just proves and shows that the warnings did not occur. Bernie is today sick also. the individual on top of this tank. Respiratory, kidney problems, rashes, neurological, the same as everybody else. Again, a civilian who has been denied medical care by the United States government. This fine gentleman is deceased. Cancer.
Disregarded by both the Pentagon and the Veterans Administration, the growing frustration of Gulf War veterans was ultimately voiced in a series of hearings before the U.S. Congress, who over the past several years...
I've sat through 3 years of these hearings, and I'm not too sure we're getting much more information now than we did in the last 2 years.
Memo further states, and I quote again, that all documents which seem to confirm the use or detection of nuclear, chemical, or biological agents should be tagged, and the documents which could embarrass the government or DOD would be also be included in the tagged category. That seems to me to be a clear filtering or manipulation of the information.
The person who signed the document is no longer with this process. There are 2,300 pages of those logs which are still unavailable to us.
We think
that's a Defense Department decision. Do you disagree?
We will make every page available to the committee at the committee's convenience.
But you have not.
In 1993, the U.S. Congress passed a law ordering the military to research inhaled depleted uranium exposures. And one lowly colonel in the United States military, a Colonel Eric Daxon, and his boss, Army Undersecretary Bernard Roster, broke the law. They failed to conduct the research on inhaled radioactive toxic waste. And here's where Gulf War veterans are. 9 years since the start of the Gulf War, there's no research on this radioactive inhalation poisoning.
This is Colonel Eric Daxon, the Army's chief medical analyst for depleted uranium, and a frequent target of veterans organizations who accuse him of hiding the truth about DU. 50 years of state-supported research allow him to claim that soldiers' exposure to inhaled DU was not serious enough to make them sick.
Concentrations at these great distances are so low that it's very, very difficult to distinguish the depleted uranium from the natural uranium.
For the military, inhalation of DU particles poses no risk at all. And yet, in these 1995 videos produced by Captain Rupke at Pentagon demand, the dangers of internal contamination from inhalation were, if anything, emphasized.
Depleted uranium dust or smoke may be inhaled if respiratory protection is not worn. It may also be picked up and ingested if gloves are not worn and the dust is not washed off before eating, drinking, or using the latrine. Depending on how much depleted uranium is inhaled, swallowed, or gets under the skin, heavy metal poisoning may occur, which can cause damage to internal organs and tissues. The second concern, radioactivity. Health effects of ionizing radiation depend on whether it is alpha, beta, or gamma, and if the radioactive material is inside or outside the body.
No, the video's never really been used. That's disturbing. Probably some have seen it, but not all. It's definitely not put out to the extent that it should be. And I think that's obvious because we still have uranium-contaminated equipment scattered all over Iraq and Kuwait. And now we have it in Kosovo and every place else. Everybody knew that I was sick and having kidney problems and respiratory problems while I'm the director of the project trying to figure out how to clean up the mess. In September of 1996, while I was at the Pentagon briefing everybody on the proper procedures to implement the depleted uranium training program, to show the videos that I had the responsibility to write, direct, edit, produce, and send out. September 1996, they came up to me and said, "Hey, Doug, you're hot for DU." Verbally. "Okay, would somebody help me?" Never happened. Astonishing. That's what they did to the depleted uranium team health physicist and project director.